That humans and apes share a common ancestor should come as no surprise. You see it in our faces and our thumbs. And if you've ever watched a nature show about primates, you've recognized some of our more aggressive and competitive traits in them. But what about the finer qualities we associate with humans? Morality, compassion, kindness. Are they the result of a more advanced evolution? Evidence that we've transcended our animal nature? Or do they also have a genetic foundation? Dr. Franz de Waal's new book, Our Inner Ape, comes up with some interesting answers. It's published by Riverhead Books. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show. Hi.
I'm glad to be here.
So how important is the study of primate behavior to understanding human behavior?
Well, we are primates. So by studying primates, we study basically ourselves also at the same time. And the two species I focus on in the book, which are chimpanzees and bonobos, are the ones who are very, very close to us. So you must have heard recently 98.5% identical genetically to us.
Although the genes aren't lined up the same way.
No, that's always the interesting question, is what the 1.5% is doing. And I think there's sort of two sides to the issue. People tend to exaggerate the things that make us unique, like walking on two legs and having a big brain, and we make a big deal about all of that. And maybe it's not as big a deal as we think it is. And the other issue is that there may be genes on that 1.5% who are doing things like regulating other genes, and they may have, in that sense, a far more impact than the average gene, let's say.
As a result of Jane Goodall's work, we have come to understand that chimps have a lot more in common with us than we thought in the past. But I just heard of some photographic evidence that even some of the other apes are using tools. We thought it was just chimps. Mm-hmm. And now, I don't know if you saw that report about a female who used a stick to gauge the depth of a river, and it was quite a sophisticated use of tools. So can we say that pretty much all the primates are a lot closer to humans than we thought in the past?
No, all the apes. So the report that you mentioned is a gorilla. So that's on gorillas. And gorillas, for a long time, people have believed, well, they use tools in captivity, but they never do it in the field, and maybe they're a bit dumb and things like that. But gorillas are very smart animals. The apes, there's only four ape species, you know, the orangutan, the gorilla, the chimpanzee, and the bonobo. And us, I would say we are the fifth ape. I don't see a reason not to call us apes. And so you have only five species to deal with.
Now, all those others are better known than bonobos, and yet bonobos in some ways are the closest to humans, aren't they?
Well, they're equally close to us as the chimpanzee, but it's really remarkable that an animal so close to us has been ignored so persistently, even though over the last 20, 25 years we've had quite a bit of evidence, you know, on their behavior. And I think that is partly because their behavior doesn't fit the thinking in let's say, anthropology, where the thinking is that we are killer apes. So as soon as we do something bad, we say we blame that on our animal nature. We say we're acting like animals. And as soon as we do something nice and good, we claim that for ourselves. And the chimpanzee fit that image because the chimpanzee does a lot of bad stuff. The chimpanzee is violent and dominance-oriented and so on. So the chimpanzee was accepted in that way of thinking as a good model of us. But the bonobo is far gentler. The bonobo is a very friendly, peaceful animal with a lot of sex, with female dominance, which is another thing that upset a lot of people, I suppose. So the females dominate the males, at least collectively. And so the bonobo didn't fit the line of thinking, and as a result it was shoved aside, and people would say, well, let's forget about the bonobo and just focus on the chimp.
What's their natural habitat?
Bonobos live in what is now ironically called the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which is sort of the biggest mess that we have in Africa. And that's a very large country, and within that country they have an area about as great as Great Britain, a forested area, and that's where they live.
And are they as endangered by encroachment of humans as chimps and gorillas are?
Their environment was until recently pretty undisturbed, but the logging companies are there. They're making roads in there. As a result, people are hunting animals, including bonobos, killing and eating them. And so we think there may be 10,000 to 20,000 bonobos left, which is really not much.
Are they as large as chimpanzees?
They are a bit smaller. They used to be called the pygmy chimps, which is really a misnomer because people think they are like little little animals. They're a little bit smaller than, and more elegant, definitely more elegant. Their legs are longer. When they stand upright, they look very human-like compared to the chimpanzee.
So I would, it would be pretty easy for me to distinguish between them and chimps if I knew I was supposed to distinguish between them?
The easiest way would be listening. Because their vocalizations are totally different. So the chimpanzee has this hoo, hoo, hoo type sound, and the bonobo, I cannot even imitate, it's more like wah, 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 very, very high-pitched sounds that they have.
It's one thing to study them in their natural habitat, another to study them in captivity. Do bonobos pretty much do the same thing in either place?
Well, as far as the two main features, like female dominance and sexuality, are concerned, that's all very similar across the board, I think. Of course, animals in the field, they have to work for their food. They have to travel around and gather their food. And in that sense, they have a very different life than the ones in captivity. So there are major differences. But the main features, sex and peace, so to speak, and female dominance are identical.
The first study comparing chimps and bonobos was done in the Hellabrunn Zoo, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had them there. And
when was that?
Oh, this was in the 1930s, and it was published after the war. All the bonobos died during the war because the Americans were bombing Munich, where Hellabrunn Zoo is, for good reasons, I think. But all the bonobos died in that bombardment, mainly of the noise. And the chimpanzees all survived, the chimpanzees at the zoo. And so that gives you a little bit of a sense of the difference between the two species, is that the bonobos were so easily frightened compared to chimpanzees, who are much tougher.
And it's interesting that when that study was published in 1954, that it didn't inspire more people to look at the bonobos as a special case. Because I guess it's because, as you pointed out earlier, they don't fit in with all of our ideas about human aggression.
Yeah, so there are many reasons. First of all, that report was in German, and people don't read German as much. And
well, Germans do.
Yeah, Germans, and I do, yeah, but most scientists don't. And then the other thing was that there's all this sex going on that the bonobos have. And,
so was that embarrassing to people?
I think so, and it still is to some degree. I still have to fight sometimes with people who make nature documentaries, and each time, I call it coitus interruptus. Each time you see bonobos do something on the screen, they freeze it because they don't want to show the whole sequence. And so they shy away from it, and especially Americans are bad at that. I mean, Americans are very shy people sexually. So violence is good, and that's why the chimpanzee is a good species, so to speak. But sex, you know, that's problematic.
So the chimps get an R rating, and the bonobos get, bonobos, I guess I should say, get an X rating.
X rating, yeah.
My guest is Franz de Waal, a biologist and ethologist, is it? He is currently the C.H. Candler Professor in the Psychology Department of Emory University and Director of the Living Links Center at the Yerkes Primate Center in Atlanta, author of five previous books, including The Ape and the Sushi Master and Peacemaking Among Primates. His most recent is Our Inner Ape, a leading primatologist explains why we are who we are. And it is published by Riverhead Books. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. So do we understand how they develop into this matriarchal society and why they engage in sex so much?
We have a few clues. So we know, for example, that they live in forests that are richer than where the chimpanzees live.
Because the chimps are a male-dominated society.
Yeah, they're quite different in many ways. And so the bonobos live in a richer environment which permits the females to travel together, which is a big difference with chimp females, who have to spread out in order to find enough food for themselves. They cannot travel together. As a result that the females can travel together, they can form a big coalition, which is what they do. They all hang together. They have a high level of solidarity. And as a collectivity, they can chase males away from food, and that's how they dominate the males. And there's another issue.
Even though they're smaller than the males.
Yeah, they're smaller. Males are larger. The size difference is a bit like in the human species. The females are 80% of male weight. And the females lack these big canine teeth that the males have. So there's quite a bit of a difference. And a single male and a single female, some zoos sometimes have that. They have a single male and a female. Then the male dominates. But as soon as you add a second female, it's over for the male.
And then the group chooses an alpha male, a female.
chooses, I think that alpha female becomes an alpha female.
In the same way that a dominant male does among the chicks.
She has to fight for that, yeah.
What does fighting mean in this case with a non-aggressive group?
Well, they're not so non-aggressive. It's not an absence of aggression that they have, but they are very good at peacemaking. So in the bonobo, there's no territorial conflict that is lethal, as it is in the chimpanzee. So there's no invasions and killing of others. And the second thing is that as soon as there are big tensions and tendency to fight, they're going to go into the sex mode, which they use to reconcile. And so they're very good at peacemaking, but it's not as an absence of tensions.
So whenever there's a problem, they make love, not war.
Yeah, they're sort of hippies in that regard, yeah.
Do bonobo males have individual status in the group as well?
Yeah, and that status is determined by their mom. So they're really mama's boys in a sense because they travel with their mom. And if their mother is high ranking, she will help her son get a good position.
Now, chimps only have sex when the females go into estrus, which is always indicated by a physical thing there. The buttocks turn pink.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen with bonobos. Are they more like humans in the way that they can have sex 365 days a year?
Now, not so many days, but they have their swelling phase of the genitals is much longer than in the chimpanzees, about 10 times longer on average. So the female bonobos have sex throughout their cycle. So they have extended receptivity, as we call it in the field. And they do that partly to, we think, to mislead males about paternity. Because if you have a lot of sex outside of your ovulation period as a female, then for the males it becomes, and with many different partners, then it becomes for the males impossible to tell who is my offspring, who is not my offspring.
But that's true with chimps as well. Although with the chimps, the dominant male and then the hierarchy, they go in order when they have sex with the female when she's in estrus. So it's assumed usually that the first or second partner will be the father of the chimp.
Yeah, in chimps, there is some level of paternity confusion, but the bonobo has taken that to its extreme, to the point that males have absolutely no clue who their offspring may be. And we think that that serves a purpose, because we think that that prevents infanticide by males, which is a problem in many animals, certainly a problem in chimpanzees, also a problem in humans, actually, in lions, in bears, in many animals. And so if males cannot know if they're going to kill an infant, whether that's their own infant or not, then they will stop doing it because then it becomes counterproductive. And what we have done as humans is actually we have countered infanticide also, but in exactly the opposite way as the bonobo. So we have formed pair bonds. That's a remarkable characteristic that we have compared with chimps and bonobos. We have nuclear families with pair bonding in there where males are involved in caring for offspring. And in that system, it pays for the male to know his paternity, because why invest in offspring if it's not your own offspring? And so we have gone completely the opposite route, where we prevent infanticide by having male protectors, and these males will protect the family.
Now, there's a social pecking order that affects the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether the same thing applies as rigidly among humans, but we do have our own pecking orders, don't we?
Well, yeah, in the social sciences, there's a sort of taboo on the dominance hierarchy. And so since I'm a biologist who works in the psychology department, I'm sometimes confronted with that because I open these textbooks that they have. And if I look for the word power and dominance, it's basically absent, except for power abuse or something like that. Whereas
even though we know it exists.
Of course, if you walk into a boardroom, within a glance of 20 seconds, you know sort of what the order is there. You walk into a school, you know what the order. We are very sensitive to power relationships, but the social sciences sort of act as if they don't exist. And there's actually very interesting indications in the body language of people. For example, the swagger of George Bush is very similar to the swagger of a dominant male chimpanzee, you know, putting his arms aside and walking bipedally like that. Chimpanzee males do that also. And in other parts of body language, there's even more subtle things, like there's a study on the low hum of the human voice, in which we communicate in the low hum what our status is. They have discovered that by looking at shows like the Larry King Show and how was Larry King's voice compared to the guests that he had, like, let's say, Bill Clinton is high-ranking, Dan Quayle is low-ranking compared to him. So they did all these analyses. And in the low hum of our voices, we are communicating on a daily basis what our status is relative to somebody else. And we're not even conscious of it.
But we have Karl Rove's, people, powers behind the throne. Does that occur in other primates?
Yes, yes. That's a typical thing in chimpanzees. They're not... The Dick Cheney is more like the typical case because it's an older male who's over the hill. So usually it's males who are over the hill, like Ted Kennedy's, Dick Cheney's, who have no chance themselves basically anymore to become the alpha male. But they will push the alpha male forward and they will direct him. And yes, in chimpanzees I've seen that often, is that a male is deposed. He clearly cannot make his own comeback anymore, and then what he does is the next best thing is he makes a comeback through a younger male that he pushes forward. He defends that male. He becomes his partner. He gets sexual privileges out of it, which is the main reason why chimps have dominance fights. And so he gets benefits out of it, but he's still the one, the decisive factor.
But you say that doesn't happen with bonobos. Although scientists first believed that bonobos were monogamous, didn't they?
There was a time, a brief period of time, where we thought the bonobo would provide us the model of the human family because we always saw these males and females traveling together, and there was some sort of thinking that there was pair bonding going on until they discovered that the males who were traveling with the females were their sons. So the adult son hangs on to mom. It's because mom is more powerful than he is, and so that's very beneficial.
Do female children get certain benefits from being female when they're young?
The female children leave the group. So when they reach puberty, they become wanderers and travelers, and at some point they join a different group where they then need to find their place in the female hierarchy. And so females, when they reach puberty, they're basically gone.
Is it true that the bonobos French kiss?
The funny story that I tell in the book is of a caretaker in who I once met who was very used to chimpanzees. And he said he was used to chimpanzees kissing him on the cheek and stuff like that. And so he once started working with bonobos, and he accepted a kiss from a bonobo. And before he knew it, he had a tongue in his mouth, and he wasn't too happy about that.
My guest is Franz Duval, FRANSDEWAAL. His latest book, Our Inner Ape, is published by Riverhead. Stay with us for more. We're back with Franz Duval. His book is Our Inner Ape, subtitled A Leading Primatologist Explains Why We Are Who We Are. It's published by Riverhead. Well, we've been talking about how we have similarities with any number of the different apes, but we have similarities, we have differences to each. So what do we do? Do we just simply pick and choose which ones we want to understand as influencing our behavior?
Well, people have been doing that to some degree by focusing so much on the chimpanzee. So they have a worldview of the human species as competitive and nasty and selfish. You must have heard of the selfish gene and stuff like that. And so the chimpanzees seem to fit that, even though the chimpanzee at times is quite cooperative, I would say. And the bonobo has been left out. And I argue in this book that we are bipolar apes. We have both sides. When we are bad, we are worse than any other animal, because we kill each other on a massive scale and torture each other and all of that. And actually, torture is a very human thing. And then when we are good and loving and altruistic, we are better than any other animal. We can be better than any animal. And so we have this whole spectrum within us. And I don't think the human species can be reduced to one or the other, which is sometimes what people do.
Do we see altruism in apes as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not unusual at all, is that they share food with each other, that they help someone who has fallen, or that they slow down for the unfortunate. So, you know, leaving the unfortunate behind, as we did in Katrina, people who basically got stuck there and couldn't get out, that's not a very primate thing to do, actually. Primates have a high level of solidarity within their groups, like many other social animals, like dolphins and wolves and so on.
You tell a story of introducing a mother chimp, Queef, who had adopted a newborn, was it Rusi, back into the chimp community at the Arnheim Zoo. Why were you worried?
Oh, that was a very troubling case because she had a baby that we had taken away and reintroduced to her. And we had actually taught her to bottle feed that baby. So it was not her own baby. And then we introduced her. And since that baby was not very well known to the chimpanzee community as a result of the procedure, they could kill it. The males could kill it. And actually there was a male named Nicky who we think had the intention to do that because we saw him through the bars grab at the offspring. And so we were very worried. And fortunately, there were two males who were very close to that female and good friends with her who protected her and stood in front of her and kept Nicky, who was actually the highest ranking male, they kept him away from her. And so we were very relieved when they did that.
But that also suggests that chimps have gentler traits. Compassion in this case.
They can be very gentle. They share food. They cooperate. And so even for the chimpanzee, you could argue the chimpanzee is a bipolar ape. In the sense he has a spectrum of behaviors. And the bonobo has that too.
Desmond Morris in The Naked Ape claimed that sexual inhibitions are uniquely human. Is that true?
I don't know what...
He's also thought that the missionary position was uniquely human, and you found out that that's not true.
No, the bonobo has plenty of that. It's actually a sort of interesting history to the name missionary position. But the bonobo has a lot of that. And Desmond Morris also claimed that we were the sexiest apes.
We had orgasms, that's what I meant to say.
Yeah, orgasms, yeah.
The others don't?
No, because there have been experiments done in laboratories, not with apes, but with monkeys, where they found that during sex, females had uterine contractions and increases in heart rate, very similar patterns to human females during orgasm. So we have no reason to believe that orgasm is a uniquely human feature.
What about other forms of human sexuality? Are there any gay bonobos?
Gay is an interesting word because sometimes people say bonobos are gay animals.
Homosexual bonobos.
Yeah, they show homosexual behavior, and they show plenty of it, actually, because bonobos have sex in all combinations of individuals. So male-male, male-female, male-juvenile, male-female, obviously. So all combinations occur. I would still not call that gay animals because none of the bonobos that I've ever seen is exclusively oriented to the same gender. So that's what I associate with the term gay.
Now, I'm sure you heard the story about whether it's true or not, the bishop's wife who learned of Darwin's theory in the 19th century and said to her husband, "Dear, I hope it's not true, but if it is, I hope nobody hears about it."
Mm-hmm.
How much does all of this play into the current debate over evolution in your mind?
Yeah, it plays into it in the sense that the intelligent design movement is sort of replacing the creationist movement. And so evolution is sort of under pressure in this country. And anyone who claims that we are apes, I'm not even claiming that we descend from apes, but we are apes, is of course on the side of evolution in this debate. And in that sense, it plays into it. I'm very puzzled by that whole debate, maybe because I come from the outside. I'm not an American, and it's a peculiarly local phenomenon, really. It's only in North America that people have that debate, because otherwise in the world no one has it.
But there are people who believe in a literal interpretation of the Bible all over the world, and they do in other religions as well, literal interpretations of their own holy books.
Mm.
To India, you go to the Islamic world as well, you're going to find people who say, well...
They don't take that to the point of saying that evolution is nonsense. So that's not usually the case. And so, for example, in the East... since the soul can travel between human and animal, so the soul can go, my soul can go into a cat, and then from the cat it can go into somebody else. That sharp distinction between human and animal is not made, and so no one was ever upset when there was a theory coming along saying that we descended from the apes. So it's no big deal for them.
John Calhoun did an experiment with rats that seemed to confirm that the less space, the more aberrant behavior and the more aggression. Does mm-hmm. that apply to the apes as well?
No, I've done a lot of research on that, and maybe it's partly because I come from one of the most crowded countries in the world. The Netherlands has very high population density and actually a very low murder rate, compared to, for example, the U.S., which has a very low population density and a very high murder rate. And so I
never. Well, you don't have guns available to everyone in the Netherlands either, do you?
I'm not sure that that's the issue, but it is. Yeah, it is probably a contributing factor that you have a lot of guns around here. But even without that, I'm not sure that that's the main factor. But when I studied primates, the crowding level of primates, I found that there's absolutely no connection between aggression level and crowding level. And if you look actually also at human societies, if you do a correlation across all the countries in the world and you plot population density against homicide rate, you find no correlation at all.
Are all of the apes capable of kindness, acts of kindness? And for example, you tell the story about a bonobo named Kidogo who had a heart condition and seemed to be very confused by it, but he was taken care of by the others.
Yeah, Kidogo was at a zoo where he got lost each time because he was sort of mentally disturbed, maybe by his heart condition. And so each time the keepers would call him to a different part of the building, he would get completely lost. And after 2 weeks of that, the oldest male of the group would take him by the hand and lead him to the place where the caretakers wanted him to be, which means that that older male had an understanding of what the caretakers wanted and had an understanding of the handicap of Kidogo. So that's high level of empathy right there, and I think bonobos are more empathic than most primates.
So humans the most, perhaps, then bonobos, then chimps, and then gorillas?
Gorillas are very empathic animals.
They are.
Actually, the most famous case of empathy that people probably remember is that case in the Brookfield Zoo where a child fell into the enclosure of the gorillas and was picked up by a female gorilla. It was no big deal, in my opinion, because any female gorilla would do that any time for a juvenile gorilla. That was perfectly normal behavior. So all that was special about it is that she picked up a human child.
What about reciprocities? Do apes reciprocate? Do they keep emotional ledgers?
Yeah, they do, I think. We've done a lot of research on that where we, for example, one of the studies we introduce, we measure in the morning who grooms whom for how long, which chimps do spontaneously. Then we introduce food and we see who shares with whom. And so if I have groomed you for a long time this morning, the chance of me getting food from you are dramatically increased.
But that's not the reason you would have groomed me, or would that have been one of the
reasons? Well, we're thinking actually, there's now research going on by us and by other people, we're thinking actually that they plan these things out. But that's much harder to demonstrate. For the moment, all we know is that there's a connection between the two.
And do we know whether they have long-term memories in this regard? Someone who helped them 2 years ago, they meet again after all this time and have fond memories?
I think if it is a dramatic event where, let's say, I save your life, well, I think that would be remembered. Not little things like grooming and food sharing, which are minor, really.
One of the big surprises came when people discovered that apes recognize themselves in mirrors. Why is that important? Was that one of the things that we wanted to just keep as a human ability?
It was important because it has always been connected with self-awareness. Of course, as soon as this was discovered in chimpanzees, people said, maybe it's not self-awareness, which is always sort of the trick, you know, like as soon as you discover that apes have symbolic communication, which was initially the definition of language, people would say, well, maybe language is more than symbolic communication. So that's always the issue. The apes keep pushing the envelope. But to recognize yourself in a mirror is actually a big deal, also during human development. If you had a child at home and it would not recognize itself in the mirror when it's 3 years old, it has a serious problem.
Are you one of those people who believes that the apes can communicate through language? There are some who doubt all of those examples of apes knowing what they do. They put letters together.
Yeah, or they have sign language, yeah. Even though I'm a person who always stresses the continuities between humans and apes, that's the one place where I draw the line, is I don't think they have language. I think we can teach them a lot of elements of language, which are important elements, such as using symbols. We can teach them that. But chimpanzees are not natural language users, in my opinion.
But you also say that caretakers have a higher opinion of apes' mental abilities than psychologists or philosophers, because the caretakers see them mm-hmm. interacting all the time?
Yeah, I think that's basically anyone who works on a daily basis with the great apes, such as I do or the field workers do, they have a high opinion of them. But people who write theoretical treatises on how special the human species is, which is what philosophers often do, and who never interact on a daily basis with these animals, maybe see them for 2 minutes at the zoo at a time or something, they have much lower opinions.
Do you name all of your apes?
Yeah, they all have names.
Do they recognize their names?
Well, the funny thing is they not only recognize their own names. So if I call Rita, so to speak, Rita will come. But I can also tell Georgia to get me Rita. So they also know all each other's names. So you can tell them to fetch somebody for you. And because all the experiments that we do, we have chimps who live in large social groups in an outdoor area, but we call them into a building to do a test on computers, or they do a joystick task or something like that. And if we cannot get the right chimp, we just ask somebody else to get them.
Mm-hmm. They're less likely to have a one-to-one response to offers rewards of food. I mean, it's easy to get a pigeon or a rat to do something with food as a reward than an ape. Why is that?
Well, with the primates, we've done experiments where we give them unequal rewards. That's a bit like me discovering tomorrow that my neighbor professor is getting a salary twice as high as I do, which would really piss me off. And so we noticed that the monkeys and the apes also are sensitive to inequities. And so if you give a monkey cucumber pieces for a particular task, and there's another monkey sitting next to it who you're giving grapes for exactly the same task, then the cucumber recipient will get upset and start throwing the food out of its cage and doesn't want to do it anymore. Unless you give both of them cucumber, then they're perfectly happy. That's fine with them.
And this applies to all the different ape groups?
Yeah, this applies to monkeys and apes, as far as we know.
That's wild. You also say that it's one thing for an ape, or I guess I should say primate, to greet another.
Mm-hmm.
But it's saying goodbye that is really the surprise. They're capable of saying goodbye?
Yeah, we had a particular situation where we had to call a female. This was the same female bottle raised her offspring. We had to call her out at particular times of the day, and we would do that. And then before she would come out, she would take like 10 minutes because she felt it was necessary to visit everybody on a very large island, all the other chimps, and give them a kiss or stroke their hair or something like that before she would leave. And so she was basically saying goodbye each time she left the group.
But that would also suggest that they don't have a real sense of the future, because otherwise she would know that she'd be back real soon.
Well, it is actually a sense of the future. To say goodbye, you have to foresee that you will be separated. And chimpanzees do have that sense, because we also know from the field that they sometimes collect grass helms, which are tools that they use for termite fishing. They sometimes collect them at one spot, and then 2 hours later they arrive at the place where they do the termite fishing. Means that they must have been planning this out.
Do you think there's anything more to learn about human behavior by looking at bonobos?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to learn.
There are some people who say we shouldn't even be studying them because they're so few now.
Well, that's all the more reason to study them, because we may be losing them at some point. I hope that never happens. I hope that, for example, the Salongas, which is a large national park in that part of the world, which is as big as Belgium, I hope that stays intact and that we keep them there. But yes, we should study them as hard as we can, because studying them also protects them to some degree, because the presence of researchers is usually very good for a particular rare species.
Where do you go from here? This book is called Our Inner Ape. You think you've made the case, or do you think there's still more to learn?
Oh, I think there's always more to learn. But I'm here making the first sort of connections between human behavior and the two primates closest to us.
And I want to thank you so much for being with us. We've been speaking with Franz De Waal. His latest book is Our Inner Ape, and it is published by Riverhead Books. You live here in the United States now.
I live in Atlanta, Georgia.
Could you have done all of this work back home in the Netherlands?
I might not have been supported as well as I was here. So I got a lot of good research support. But we do have bonobos and chimpanzees. Bonobos we used to have in Holland, yeah.
Thank you again for being with us. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. And just like all of the other primates, I'm going to say goodbye.
Okay. Thanks.
Fulton Fish Market will be moving to the Bronx sometime soon. On tomorrow's show, Ruth Reichel and a fishmonger will look back at the good old days at the market, plus the planets in our solar system, the world premiere of a play by Dawn Powell, and then Ralph Fiennes. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Melissa Egan with Maureen McMurray, Brenna Farrell, and Sarah English. We had help today from Zoe Arnold, Anna Burns, Helena Gindy, and Fran Jacobs. Dave Abramson was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host, and I'll see you tomorrow here on WNYC 93.9 AM 820, online at wnyc.org.